Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here.
Reminding you that American Family Insurance agents can help build a customized renter's policy.
So you can protect stuff like this.
Or this.
Or even this.
Nope. Case in point.
Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex. And welcome back to On Air with Dan and Alex. Happy Wednesday. Good to be with you guys.
Yay.
And I guess it was extra cool that last week, most of the week, I actually got to spend it with co-host Dan.
Yeah.
So I know how he is because, you know, usually I would start the episode by saying, Dan, how are you? But I can imagine life's been tough ever since, you know, we departed ways and you've had to cope with not being with me almost 24/7.
Oh my God. Life has been amazing since Saturday when we parted.
Shut up.
I have had so much fun, been so happy, felt so free. It has been the most amazing 3 to 4 days.
Listen. Let you not bullshit our listeners, okay, as to how reflective you were even in the moment. For example, you were sat in first class, and we'll come to that later, and you were like staring out the window and you were saying, you know, I'm always the one in control of the journeys for my family and my friends. You were like, it's amazing to not have to be in control of this one because you are. And I was like, yeah, Dan, that is a beautiful sunset you're looking at right now, courtesy of me.
Yeah,
that is
okay.
Really nice.
That part was pretty amazing. So for context, guys, of course, we spoke last week about why we were in Paris. We're sort of telling the story in the other direction now, but that's fine.
We shouldn't, but yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. We ended up flying from Paris to Doha together. We were booked on the A380 in business class, but as we're going to the airport, Alex reveals he's surprising me with a first class upgrade, which, as I told Alex on the flight, and the reason I was so reflective was that I was sitting there, I was like, oh my God, I have never received any flight-related gift like this from anyone besides my parents when they pay for flights when you're a kid. But literally, this is the first time as an adult. It's really fun to give something. It's really fun to give gifts, you know, but to receive an amazing surprise like this was also so much fun. And it was just the fact it was the first time, the fact we got to do it together. And it was so full circle because the only other flight we have taken together was the first day we ever met. So it's just crazy. We haven't flown together since then. Of course, Qatar Airways is one of our, you know, mutual favorite airlines. We discuss them a lot. So getting to fly them for our next flight together, especially in first class, chef's kiss.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. And we'll come to more on that later. But let's look at why we were in Paris. And we know we spoke last week's episode as to why. But that was prior to the event itself. So now we are here with all of the tea from what was a really intimate, elegant Paris Fashion Week dinner event that saw the collaboration between Riyadh Air, who, of course, the Saudi state-owned startup airline that is set to launch operations next summer, reveal their cabin crew fashion line uniforms to the likes of you and I. That is in collaboration with a Saudi fashion house based in Paris known as Ashi Studio. So we were super honored to be there because it was an intimate event. I guess at dinner there were less than 100 people.
Yeah.
And we were excited to see what this airline is up to because, I mean, there's not many airlines around the world that have the budgets the likes of a Gulf carrier, but also a still kind of an airline that only exists currently as one of the C-level executives at Riyadh Air was telling us. The airline is pretty much a PowerPoint presentation airline so far because it doesn't have any commercial aircraft. It's only just recruited its first batch of cabin crew, for example. It's only just started processing applications and converting them into actual employees for pilots and so on and so on. So it's really interesting that so far this is still an airline that is on paper, but of course has the backing of the richest sovereign wealth fund in the world, the Saudi PIF, the Public Investment Fund. And so it, the whole thing, you know, all of this coming together makes it unique. And it's why we were super pleased to be there. So how did it start? After we had recorded last week's podcast, Dan, which was really late at night, wasn't it? On the Wednesday evening when we had put this yes. out on Wednesday night, you had a slightly later bedtime that night than me because you were texting me saying that you were still editing because there were some issues with the fact yeah. that we have recorded in the same room for the first time in forever.
Yeah, it was a nightmare. I was like, oh my gosh, having to go through and mute the other person when one person is talking. So for the whole episode, thank God it was only less than 40 minutes. Thursday right. was the day of the event, which, okay, we woke up quite late, but we had an extremely busy day that day. I needed to buy a suit. I needed to buy shoes. I needed to buy everything because the event had, well, the dress code was black tie. I had nothing resembling black tie because I'd been traveling for like 2 months, didn't think I was going to an event that required a suit, so I didn't bring one. So we went a little wild and Alex introduced me to the world of Parisian shopping, which I cannot say was a good idea because now all I want to do is go back to Paris and shop. So
that means it was a very good idea. So I was super, you know, there are, you know, when you're traveling with someone for the first time, this would be the first time I would have, for example, leisure time with Dan abroad. So I'm thinking, you know, what does he want to do? Is he going to say to me, I just want to hang out by the Eiffel Tower, which I'd say to him, have a lovely day. Yeah. I wouldn't have really been part of that. So music to my ears because I do enjoy shopping, but I especially enjoy what Paris has to offer with all the Parisian boutiques and the Parisian brands and the great department stores. And so when Dan said, hey, I think we need, like, I've got to, you know, buy a suit and I don't have anything with me. And for me, it was, okay, challenge accepted. Here we go. You just follow me and I'll handle the rest. And I tell you what, guys, he was super on board with it. You and Oscar were following. Well, I'd say following. I also noted as an advantage and a pro to you, it is also one of the first times traveling somewhere that I've been with anyone who walks at exactly the same pace as me. You know, yeah. I'm so used to, you know, I lock in my destination ahead of me and boom, I'm there. Like I bolt there and the other person's like tapping me like, can you slow down for a minute? Can you? I just, yeah. But you guys were making me go faster because when I start to feel that someone is absolutely level with me, by instinct, I'm like, that means I should go faster.
Yeah.
Because things are not normal. I'm not used to. Yeah. So that was really good. And I'm glad that you enjoyed the areas that I was kind of taking you around opera area, but Place Vendôme and all of the areas that branch off of Vendôme into the small side streets, the small, as I say, Parisian cool brands and boutiques and so on. There is obviously Paris is such a powerhouse for all things fashion, which is why Riyad Air wanted their collection there. So it was nice and easy to get you a suit. But then we did derail slightly, didn't we? When we realized that it was day one of the mega once a year summer sale, of which we then proceeded to spend hours in Gallery Lafayette, and you thinking everything is free basically because of how easy you were able to obtain a tax refund from your American passport.
Hey, let's not joke around here. You were also grateful I was there because I had my passport. So in Gallery Lafayette, you can instantly cash out and get your cash refund in cash. So we were running up and down like it was an ATM, forgetting we're actually spending money to withdraw that tax refund.
It is. It's a funny concept because the fact that in, you know, I guess this, let's do this as a bit of a travel tip. If you are ever buying anything in Paris and that can be bought in Galeries Lafayette, the big famous department store that, you know, hosts hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of brands, the benefit of buying in Galeries Lafayette is you only have to then go upstairs if you are a non-EU citizen, for example, And you can do your tax refund on the spot immediately with no clue. And they give you cash immediately. So there's no faff at the airport. And we'll come to the whole thing. We had to do the airport as well because we bought other stuff outside of Gary Lafayette. But it just made it so much easier. Well, for Dan, I think he'd seen this whole new light of Paris. He'd seen an area that he didn't know so well. He'd spent hours in Gallery Lafayette. Galleries were somehow giving him cash. So the only part he was remembering was the part where a sassy sales assistant, which she was, taking cash from this kind of customized ATM that you don't ever insert a card into and giving him cash. So Dan's like, this is unbelievable. Yeah. You know, I'm getting paid me to shop here.
Yeah. So, the honest truth is that we were all enjoying it so much. We really sort of pushed it in the afternoon, evening. We were like, oh, just one more stop at the store. We were rushing around, like trying to get it all done.
The day flew.
It really did. Yeah.
But also the shop assistants were telling us that, oh, this is day one. You know, coincidentally, it was day one. So everything you can imagine, they had everything in your size. They had this. I mean, yeah, I didn't. Delusional me. I almost thought, well, luckily delusional me didn't take over. But I remember thinking, I'll just take, you know, hand luggage only to Paris because I'm only there for 2 nights. You know, well, thank God I didn't. And I took my massive case.
Yeah. When did you abandon that idea? Because when I saw you with your bags, it looked like you were moving in.
Well, luckily I did, because when I was packing to leave Paris, I was like, it doesn't fit. And I'm like trying to sit on it and close it because of the amount that we had purchased. But that day went pretty fast. We then reconvene at the hotel. You go to your room and get ready. I go to mine. And then we meet each other in the lobby and we take a Lucid car, which is a brand that Saudi Arabia is heavily investing in. It's an electric car, kind of like a Tesla. They had come from the Netherlands. We asked the drivers where these ones had positioned from. And so we have a zero emission ride to the beautiful, amazing venue that is just across the water from the Louvre. And this venue was the home of the event for the evening and where we would see what would be unveiled, which then went viral everywhere globally.
Yeah, we have to give context here because as we were driving to the event, we literally knew nothing what to expect. We didn't know if there would be 20 people or 2,000 people. We didn't know really what, for example, the schedule said there would be a performance. We had no idea what's the performance. We had no idea what anything was going to be like. Who would we sit with? Would it be standing up and mingling, or would it be a sit down dinner? So we just arrived completely unknowing, and oh my gosh, did it exceed our expectations?
Well, when we were in the car, I remember we were discussing what it's our greatest chance of, and I was saying to you, there's going to be 2,000 people there. They are going to have invited everyone under the sun like this. It's going to be packed. And you were saying, yeah. You were saying to me, do you think they've brought in loads and loads and loads of Americans who are into, rather than aviation, but are into fashion?
Yeah.
I was saying, oh my God, yeah, you're right. Or what if we're not sitting next to each other? What if there's 150 tables and, you know, it's like a wedding and I'm sat on the other side of the room? And we're saying, okay, well, you know, maybe we respect the seating plan, then we swap later. All these scenarios. And then we're pleasantly surprised by this intimate, you know, very selective list of guests that range from Saudi royalty all the way to some in aviation. There were some print journalists there. There was former BBC News. There was somebody from Bloomberg, Financial Times, but then also those that were involved in fashion. And then, I mean, so we maybe I'll go into this in a minute. Let's stick to the order.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a crazy surprise.
I want to expand on the guest list. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we meet Tony Douglas, the CEO. He was on episode 10 of On Air, and he's super excited telling us about how we're going to see cabin crew fashion. His lines are kind of similar to what we heard 40 episodes ago in terms of the brand being Riyadh. And we learned more about that as the night went on. But he was excited, understandably so. And, you know, a few photos later, we're kind of looking around, wondering what to expect. We then move on into the venue.
So when we walk in, this is truly one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. I told the people who arranged this. I told Anton, who is sort of responsible for customer experience at Riyadh Air, I said, this belongs in a modern art museum, not at a dinner. You've seen the pictures on our Instagrams. The tea, everything was just unreal. So, so beautiful. So it just felt like, what is this opulent, over the top world we're entering right now?
But in an understated way. I mean, I didn't think it was over the top.
It wasn't gold.
Of course, the fact that the table, it was one kind of massive dining table that we would all have this dinner party on, had an almost loop the loop on as part of the design, where the table settings continued vertically up, and you're wondering how on earth that plate and glass is upside down, obviously glued on. But all of this, as you say, was kind of the vision of Anton Vigen, who is the VP for guest experience. And he's been heavily involved and is heavily involved in everything that we're going to be able to see going forward. So that's the uniforms, it's the upcoming cabin interiors. It was also this event. And I said, oh, this has Anton written all over it. And he confirmed that it was him. And it was great to catch up with him. So we were in this, you know, exquisite, very, very elegant, venue. And we take our seats. You and I were sitting next to each other. That was
I think you were happy about
seating plan. You know, I never mind kind of, you know,
branching
the opportunity to branch out a bit. I mean, you had been glued to me all day in the department store. But no, it was good. I had you on my right, and I had the daughter of the Saudi ambassador to France on my left, and she was really cool. And then she's kind of a New Yorker, isn't she? So you two then start discussing all the weird and wonderful things about New York, everything from, you know, the fact that
taking the subway to NYU.
Yeah, she takes the subway a lot, and she's like, you know, it's okay because New Yorkers look out for each other, and she doesn't feel so worried. But whereas she does as a young single woman traveler, for example, in the evening or at night in London, she was saying she feels safer in New York. So we had some interesting conversations with her, and then the evening started, and the music started. And we started to see for the first time what we now know is the Riyadh Air uniforms for the airline that launches operations next year.
Yeah. And I have to say, it was smart of them to do a fashion show like that, because I think we were both so like impressed by the fashion show element that we almost didn't think that much about the uniforms. We were just like, whoa, like, look how this model is strutting and like working this outfit so well. So it was like the whole atmosphere made it seem so impressive, and it make you completely forget this is going to be seen on an aircraft or this is going to be seen in an airport. At that moment, it was just like, wow, this is the best thing I've ever seen.
It's funny, isn't it? Because we were very much at a Paris Fashion Week dinner event. There was very little evidence of it being an airline event. For example, there were no model aircraft anywhere. There was no Riyadh Air branding inside splattered across the walls and the LED screen walls and so on. There were no hints to commercial aviation. It was a very fashion forward focused event. And so you're right, when we were watching the models come out onto the runway, you know, pardon the pun, and start and start their walk so that we could see the uniforms, there was that moment where we were seeing something that, wow, that's a cool blazer, that's an amazing winter coat, and then thinking, wait, this is what the crew are going to be wearing? You know, you mix that with, like, in my head I was thinking, this is too beautiful to fit with, you know, operational delays, French air traffic control strikes, everything that goes wrong in aviation all the time. But for those that haven't seen the uniforms, you can head over to both mine and Dan's Instagrams. We've posted already what these are. And I guess the only caveat here is that Anton, the VP of Guest Experience, told us that the materials that were used in the fashion show reveal that we were present at are likely to be thicker than that we will see when the aircraft actually take to the skies and the crew get airborne. And that makes sense because everything was kind of thick, right? The Pan Am inspired uniforms, the Catch Me If You Can, these were heavy weight materials that probably aren't going to be the most practical in real life scenarios, which is why those materials are slightly going to be, differ from the real thing when they get going.
Yeah, exactly. One of the coolest things, let's get to the guests, because one of the coolest things about the event was how low-key it was. Like, we were just sitting, having our meal. You didn't really walk around and mingle. The room was quite dark, and because of the way the table was, you also couldn't see most of the room, so you couldn't really tell who was there and who wasn't. So at the end of the evening, we're chatting with Anton, and he goes, oh yeah, like, oh no, no, no. Because you see a guy walk by and you're like, wait,
yeah,
is
so
that
a guy a guy walks past me. Okay. Now I hope that the listeners have seen The White Lotus season 2 to understand this. Okay. The White Lotus is, I think, one of the most watched TV series of modern times, and everyone
and
is eagerly anticipating season 3.
On the show. Yeah. On
the
our
most
show.
Discussed on air also. Yeah. It's a masterpiece of a series. Anyway, so a guy walks past me, like from his seat, and walks behind me, and I'm looking at him, and I turned to Anton and I was like, Anton, is that not the attempted murderer lead, quote, mean gay, as he was known in the White Lotus series, who tried to kill Jennifer Coolidge's character in White Lotus? And he was like, yeah, that's Tom Hollander. That's his name. And I was thinking, he's a
he
dinner with us. Yeah. What? Right. Okay. Then this starts to kind of unravel, and we begin to discover who else is at this same table with us. But because of the way that the lighting is, as you say, you can only clearly see who's opposite you, who's next to you, who's diagonal, and then kind of ends there.
Yeah. So at this point he goes, oh, well, we have a few other A-list celebrities here, but we don't really want to make it, you know, a big deal. We want to keep it, you know, they're just here to attend like anyone else. And we're both like, tell us more. Tell us just a little
well,
more.
I would like to say for the record here that I was super chill about it and was ready to say, oh, that's cool, Anton. Nice. Dan, I saw a different side of him at this point. Okay.
I'm a sucker.
Dan was fully, you have to tell me who's here, and like going into breakdown mode. And I'm looking at him like, Dan, chill out. Like, you're here. That's big enough. No. And he's like, but there's A-list people here. And so Dan starts extracting names out of Anton, the VP, who knows who is at this table with us, because, as I say, because of the design and the loop in the middle, we can't clearly see.
Yeah. So we find out that 5-time Oscar Award nominee Michelle Williams is there from movies like The Greatest Showman, it's called. All types of other amazing, huge movies. We go, what? Then he tells me, oh yeah, and there's an actress from Stranger Things here. I go, I clench my hands. I go, oh, what? I love Stranger Things. So I'm like, who from Stranger Things? He goes, oh yes, Sadie Sink. Do you know her? I'm like, literally, I lost all composure. I was like, shut
you did
up.
At that point, it was very difficult to speak with you because, yeah, okay, you didn't do anything embarrassing. You just remained seated, but you were no longer with us. Your head is now trying to process who you were at dinner with.
Yeah.
And the fact that, and you're having this civil war in your head about, do you approach, do you not? And I'm like, of course you do not.
I was like, so you're telling me that star and center of Stranger Things season 4 and most seasons, star of Taylor Swift's All Too Well film, which won her a Grammy, and animal rights activist Sadie Sink is in this room with me right now. And he's like, I think so. And this is toward the evening. He looks around and he goes, oh yeah, this was when dinner was already over. He goes, oh, it looks like she left already. I was like, are you kidding me? That's why I don't go to these events.
But she didn't leave, right? Didn't she walk past us? Or was
that
Michelle
Williams?
No, that
was Michelle Williams, which was also like crazy. Because I was like, we're like, do we say hi? Yeah. No, let's play it cool. But unfortunately,
well, we didn't
want
to say hi as somebody was leaving. You know, different if it was still earlier on in the night. We were all at the same table, but we just hadn't noticed. So, and you know what? It wasn't just the A-list that we got to meet and then we enjoyed our company with. There were so many individuals that are part of this new team or that are working in aviation or in aviation PR that we really had fun spending the night with. We want to give a shout out to Celestina. She was an iconic individual that she's on the external PR side of things. But you know when you just meet someone and immediately they have that good energy that is just warm and relaxed, and you know, you're able to notice the individuality of that person in seconds. That's definitely the effect that we had on her. We consider her a friend now. We're going to test the level of this friendship to see if she hears 25 minutes into this episode us complimenting her persona, like, and the fact that we got to hang out with her.
We literally called Celestina at 1 a.m. when the event was over, just because we had separation anxiety.
Finished at that time.
I know. Yeah. And she was still up, and we were like, "We miss you." So yeah, she was one of those people you see and you're like, the second you see them, you're like, we're going to get along.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. So, you know, the uniforms were, it was interesting to see what they had gone with. Definitely, you know, visually, to try and describe it by audio, by way of podcast, it was definitely in line with what they'd wanted. It was a very Pan Am inspired uniform. It almost, some of the parts of the kind of 15 pieces that we saw look like the Pan Am uniform, just in Riyadh colors. So that there's that. It was also, you know, the Catch Me If You Can kind of vibe. Tony Douglas, the CEO, kept going on that he wants it to be a head turner. I guess the other side of it, which we did, you know, we have spoken briefly about, and this will be in the video, Dan, won't it, on your channel, is that if you were expecting to see a Saudi design influence in the brand that is Riyadh, that we keep hearing about, brand Riyadh, well, I don't think you should be expecting that, because what we saw didn't include anything obviously Saudi. So for example, if we look at Etihad, one of their competitors based in Abu Dhabi, the Etihad uniform, the Etihad branding, and all areas of Etihad Airways' design really, really integrates and includes the different design elements that are prominent across the UAE and Abu Dhabi. You have the whole facets of Abu Dhabi design. You have the crisp cuts. You have the Arabic kind of calligraphy influence into so much of the design. We didn't see any of that with Riyadh Air. And in fact, the lack of anything obviously Saudi or even obviously Middle Eastern started, kind of prompted a chat, didn't it, about 1 a.m. You and I sat with Oscar in the lobby at the end of the evening. It was about 2 a.m. at this time, where we were kind of realizing maybe brand Riyadh is...
I have to explain this.
Go on.
You know, it's a joke on the podcast at this point, and we speak about it so much, how Tony Douglas just says, the brand is Riyadh, the brand is Riyadh, the brand is Riyadh. And we're like, we know the brand is Riyadh. But then after we've spent all this time discussing, Oscar and I go back to our room, and Oscar goes, wait a minute, the brand really is Riyadh. And I'm like, what do you mean? And then he explains, and I'm like, oh my God. So I sent Alex a voice message. I go, Alex, I just realized the brand is Riyadh, and it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And
the fact Can you imagine? It's about 2:30 in the morning now, right? I'm falling asleep. I get a voice note from him, and I think to myself, well, I better check in case, I don't know, something's happened, or he can't get into his room, and like, whatever. And he's like, Alex, I just realized what the brand is. I'm like, you know what? Good night, so, Dan. Okay. Because the guy, Dan, doesn't drink, but at that moment, I had a question mark.
Yeah. So the context here, the thing that I realized that Tony Douglas has been trying to say this whole time, but we have not understood, is that Riyadh Air has really nothing to do with Saudi Arabia. It has nothing to do with that culture. Riyadh Air is the airline of this concept of Riyadh. If you think about Dubai, many people know Dubai. They don't know the United Arab Emirates, or they don't know the context that Dubai is in. So Saudi Arabia is trying to do a similar, even more modern version of what the UAE has done with Dubai. So what they're saying is that the brand is Riyadh. The brand is this sort of picture Dubai in a bubble from the rest of Saudi Arabia, but something we don't even know yet. It's still being formed. So what we saw was, yeah, there were no mentions of Saudi Arabia whatsoever. There were very few references to aviation besides the actual uniforms. So it's just this thing that's being invented as we go along. And I think it's really cool to see what this will become.
Brand Riyadh is like a concept, and Brand Riyadh isn't even Riyadh, the capital of Saudi Arabia. You know, there's nothing that is born out of Riyadh itself that then has made its way, obviously, yet into what Brand Riyadh is. It's just a, what we could take from it was that we had discovered or started to understand what is just a global modern concept. And they kept hammering down how this is, you know, modern day this and modern day that. But we just saw something that actually, if you did see all of those crew members in the airport, of course, you would look because the uniforms look smart and chic and the cuts and the designs are very cool. But you wouldn't pin it to Saudi Arabia. Maybe that's what they want. Now, I would argue that's a bit unusual because they also keep hammering down that this airline is point-to-point airline. This is to bring, quote, the world to the kingdom and the kingdom to the world. So if you're not going for that international kind of shuttle, transit shuttle, the likes that Emirates does with the UAE, and Emirates doesn't care that you don't know where the UAE is. It just hopes that either you fly Emirates from London to Australia or you're visiting Dubai, therefore you're going to go with Emirates and it's so heavily connected to the city of Dubai. I guess Riyadh still has to figure out exactly what that part is, but the Brand Riyadh that we had seen, as we mentioned, something that was less of Saudi identity and more kind of modern, global, and so on. Another interesting takeaway that I was thinking about, Dan, just a few days ago, is that we were at an event where there was a conscious decision to have been taken to include alcohol, right? So yeah. We were at an event of a Saudi state startup airline that there is a big question mark as to whether or not Riyadh Air is going to be serving alcohol. Many travelers, there are a large demographic of travelers that will say, I won't fly Riyadh Air or any airline between, for example, London and the Far East if there is no alcohol, if it is a dry airline, because they expect if they're paying premium fares or even if they're in economy, they expect to have a drink. That's a very, very large demographic of travelers. Riyadh Air, of course, is headquartered in Riyadh, is a Saudi airline, and Saudi officially has, until now, no alcohol across the kingdom. So it's not like the other parts of the Gulf, like Qatar or UAE, where you can get it pretty much everywhere. Instead, there you can't go to a restaurant or a hotel bar and order alcohol in Saudi. And yet there we were in Paris at the Saudi state-owned startup airline with a big question mark as to whether it's going to have alcohol or not at an intimate Paris Fashion Week dinner with plenty of alcohol available. Now, there was, one side of me says to me, okay, that's quite a big clue as to the direction that this is going. And I think Riyadh Air will have alcohol on board. The other half of me can hear the team saying, well, you're overthinking this because we're in Paris. So, but still, we were at a Saudi event. And I know how these things get discussed in the boardrooms. And, you know, this wasn't a coincidence nor an accident. There was a deliberate decision taken there.
Yeah. And I think we all know there will be alcohol on Riyadh Air, but that's another discussion. We have so much more to tell you about the trip, but we don't have time in today's episode. There's going to be a YouTube video from this flight we took back from Paris that is so fun. You're going to see everything from the upgrade to the whole flight experience to trying to get a cash refund at Paris Airport and only almost missing our flight. There's so much.
Did you video
much
that part?
I think I did. I think yeah. So, but we'll.
No, it's
we'll
a, it, it should be a good yeah. video because we were. There's a lot also to say about kind of Paris Airport and Charles de Gaulle and the terminal that we were making our way through and so on. But all in all, it was, you know, to have us move on. It was a very enjoyable event. It was super revealing. Considering there were less than 100 people in the room, it's quite impressive how viral it's gone. It's gone everywhere. And by the way, Dan, I don't know about you, but it's all people have wanted to talk to me about. I've bumped into people since I've been back, and everyone wants to ask me about, even if they don't know that I was actually in that room. Oh, did you see this? Most of the reception, I mean, it's very well received. What do you think? How have people been commenting on the uniforms?
Well, unlike you, I haven't spoken to a single person since I said goodbye to you.
That's because your social battery is now absolutely empty since last week. Exactly. Meanwhile, mine thankfully tops up every night.
Honestly. Yeah, yeah. So no one has had time to ask me about it. But on social media, there have been a lot of reactions and a lot of excitement. Yeah. There's one thing while we're still on the topic, as we move into more newsy stuff that I wanted to discuss on the sort of crew appearance aspect. This week, SAS announced that cabin crew will be allowed to display tattoos in their uniform now and wear sneakers of certain colors on board all flights. And this, I put a poll on my story. 71% of people think this is a good idea. 29% think it's a bad idea. What do we think? What do you think?
I think there is a time and a place. And I know that the millennials, not even millennial, but the Gen Z answer to this is that, of course, tattoos should be able to show and people should be able to express their identity and blah, 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 blah. But I think that there is still, I'm a little bit more of a traditionalist when it comes to the workplace. And I just think there is a time and place for example, being served in a premium cabin, let's say, you know, a business class cabin that you have paid thousands for the ticket for, by somebody who is now absolutely thrilled that they can just rock up to work in trainers. Now, I wear trainers quite a lot with my suits, right? Especially if I can judge that it's, you know, it's all right. It's doable. I think I was even wearing a form of Air Force's with my suit at the Riyadh event. However, if I was serving at the event, let's say, and serving, you know, drinks, right?
There's not no, just serving looks, which you are already doing.
Well, I was. Your words, not mine. If I was, you distracted me now. If I was serving drinks, for example, if I was in anything in, stop laughing. If I was in anything in kind of hospitality, whatever, I wouldn't be wearing them. I'd be wearing a full traditional suit. Similarly, you know, if I am engaging with the public and I am covered in tattoos from my neck, you know, all the way down to everywhere, and I'm wearing a short sleeve shirt to reveal everything, I just feel that then that immediately takes away from the fact that uniform is supposed to be uniform. And therefore, if we start changing it so that actually we can see a lot of the personal identity, I know people are going to disagree with me on this. I think that there are times and places where it's not always appropriate. And I think that it's better to just see a clean, white, crisp shirt in that scenario than everything else that's underneath. For example, if EasyJet had announced that they said that now their crew can wear trainers with suits and so on, I kind of think it works. It's a low cost brand and, you know, point to point, short haul, less than 2 hour flights, cheap and cheerful, lowest fare, so on and so on. I just think that that kind of fits.
Yeah. I mean, SAS can say whatever they want, but at this point they are a low cost brand. So in that sense, it does fit. True. I have a friend who used to work for a Middle Eastern airline and she told me that like literally if she does her makeup to work, because the crew doesn't have to wear makeup, if she does her makeup, the other crew will talk shit about her for trying to look good at work and say, oh, she's trying to make us look bad, blah, blah, blah. So in that sense, I'm not surprised. You know, this is clearly the crew don't really care about the appearances or professionalism. I think I don't really mind the tattoos if there's a, obviously no face or neck tattoos, but if there's like a very specific guideline of what you can have. The sneakers, yeah. I think there is a certain point. I want crew to be comfortable, but there has to be some, you know, middle ground where you can wear comfortable shoes that also look quite presentable or look quite cool. But the pictures SAS was showing of just a black basic sneaker,
kind of
I was like,
soles, right?
Yeah, I was like, no, major no to this. So yeah that's the news out of Scandinavia from SAS.
The news sticking with Paris, but separate to our news, is that Air France is not making very much money this summer, believe it or not, because of the Olympics. And it's always funny to see this kind of reverse effect that sometimes these major, major global sporting events have. So Air France is arguing that they are taking a financial hit, or they're demonstrating through their results that they are taking a financial hit because of being the host of the Olympics there in Paris this summer, which begins in just a few weeks. And that is because most people who are not attending the Olympics, which is most people on Earth, Had they have typically been choosing to go to France or stop by Paris or transit or so on, are avoiding it, expecting some kind of chaos, disruption, everything to be busy, lines full and so on. So people are naturally gravitating away from Paris if they have absolutely nothing to do with watching the Olympics. And that is having a negative effect on Air France's bottom line for this summer. It is also the case that those that are still visiting Paris because they are going, for example, to watch some a sporting event at the Olympics are staying for longer. They're not going for, you know, 2 days and they're transiting down and they're, you know, flying out of Charles de Gaulle and going down to Milan and then from Milan to Madrid and so on. That it, Paris is, I mean, we all think it, don't we? When I first knew that we were going to be in Paris for this event, first thing I quickly did, I know that the Olympics is in late July, but I thought it's not late June, is it? Because otherwise I'm not going. Because you just associate it with long queues. People who would otherwise not be there are there, you know, it's all this kind of thing. What was your perception in terms of how ready Paris appeared? I mean, the traffic was everywhere, wasn't it?
The traffic was everywhere. The airport was complete chaos. And I'll let you say what that airport employee told you. But in general, I think, this is not a good time to visit because a lot of sites are sort of cornered off or there's fences preparing for different things.
Well, you know how we entered... how we entered the park to have those like snacks on the first afternoon. I've never entered that way. You know, these kind of weird temporary structures that we had to walk on in order to usually, Dan, outside of that hotel I was telling you about, Le Maurice, you just kind of walk straight in, you know, and it was, I mean, to touch on your point, the one of the employees of the ground handling agents at Paris Charles de Gaulle, I was walking with her when I had arrived. And she was saying, I said, you know how things, how ready is Paris? And she said, oh God, said it's a disaster. I said to her, from an aviation point of view or from a city point of view? She said both. She said the traffic is already absolutely immense. They know that they're going to close so many roads as is necessary, but there are no real clear alternatives as to where they redistribute that existing traffic, you know, elsewhere. She said, but her main concern and the concern of those at the airport was that in the name of security, they had spoken over the last week of closing some of the major roads that surround the airport, which would directly disrupt the flow of cargo, catering, cleaners, airport employees, security staff, and so on. And she said, without this clarity as to know exactly how, with guarantee, we are going to get into the airport, how do you open a check-in desk? So if your passengers end up being able to make it, where are they queuing? They're queuing at a desk staffed by no one. Or if security, you know, if just three members of security are not able to reach, then the whole thing falls apart and you get mega delays. So she was quite concerned. And she's, I know her. I've met her quite a few times when I have my arrivals into Charles de Gaulle. And she's, she hasn't mentioned this before. So that was slightly concerning to hear. And also our check-in area when we were leaving was packed. Security was... packed, but okay in terms of that it was well staffed, but everything seemed to reject, which was the weird thing. I mean, the rejection rate of the bags going through was so high. Remember the United crew that were in front of us, like four of them, like each of their bags were just rejecting and rejecting and rejecting. And these were senior pilots. Now, I would argue they know exactly how to pack their hand luggage to ensure that it doesn't reject. So
and this was also, this was the new scanners that are supposed to be, you know, better and avoid this kind of stuff. So,
yeah. And of course, we were delayed because you were being recognized left, right and center by just about everyone in the security area. And I was like, OK, Dan, you can stay there. I'm, you know, we're kind of late. And we were running by the end of it. We were running through we were running to go and get the rest of the tax refund before boarding. But we were running very soon after that as well, because Dan was not going. We were saying, no, we are not paying. We are not paying to fix the potholes in these roads in this country. Our tax dollars have to go to our own countries. We were trying to get that tax refund.
We were like, we would rather miss our flight and pay for a new flight than not get that tax refund.
Actually, listen, you said that. I remember the woman laughing when I was saying to you, Dan, if we have to donate to the French government to fix our roads, this is what we do, but we are not missing our flight. You know?
No, it was fun. So, it's funny how all news kind of ties into what we were talking about the first half of the episode. But there's another piece of news from the Gulf. Speaking of everything that's you know, the branding of Riyadh Air and everything. Emirates has just revealed, literally just now, their brand new safety video. And I have to say, it really surprised me. I assume since we're recording on Wednesday, this is coming out on Wednesday, you guys might not have seen this video. So look it up, Emirates new safety video, and see what you think. But it's a very different approach than what we see most airlines taking with new safety videos. We've obviously already discussed this a lot on the podcast. What did you think when you saw it?
Well, this was a very, very matter-of-fact, serious, factual, no niceties, no, you know, quips or comments or sarcasm or whatever. It was a very matter-of-fact, this is the Airbus A380 and these are the safety features for the A380. Place your seat here, put this here. And so super factual, right? Which, okay, it covered all of it, a lot of ground, as a safety video should. The cynic in me, Dan, though, suggests that something else is at play here. It's funny that Emirates is pushing this video today, Wednesday, as no singing, no dancing, just safety, because we care a lot about safety. They say no flash actors, no A-list, just safety. And I'm thinking, but you guys are the ones that created
always
that category.
Yeah, literally.
Right? Like, it's so funny that they're trying to distance themselves in this video by the category that they literally invented with the likes of Jennifer Aniston falling asleep and having a nightmare that she was on a Delta flight. And then she wakes up and she's like, phew. And she's asking the bartender, can we just fly this around for an extra hour? And, you know,
yeah.
So it's funny that they are the leaders in that category. They invented the category. And now they're looking at us and they're saying, you're not going to find that here. We're serious people. And so immediately something kind of pinged in my head and I thought to myself, this is not because Emirates has decided that this is what is now politically correct in terms of aircraft safety. This is because of the following. They have new uniforms coming up over the next year or so. They have new aircraft cabin interiors. And the last thing that they would do now is invest in a high profile, singing, all dancing, A-list event, A-list safety video with actors and actresses that they will be stuck with for the next 3 to 5 years, showing uniforms and aircraft interiors that will not be the ones that they want to show off, for example, maybe even this time next year. So we can refer back to this episode, but I am calling it, I am of the belief that the reason why this is a boring factual safety video is because the last thing they want to be doing is showing off the uniform that's probably going to be the quote old uniform this time next year, and the aircraft cabin interiors that we know they are updating and revealing this summer anyway. So that's why I think it's a bit cheeky of them to try to play the moral high ground and say, oh, you know, the A-list stuff is not for us, we're a serious airline. I think we're going to have, in a matter of years, and all singing, all dancing, Jennifer Aniston-led, you know, esque,
yes.
Safety vid.
We're all waiting for that. Great point. I think you could definitely be correct. The one thing Oscar and I were saying when we saw it is that Dubai is one of the most photogenic, Instagrammable, you know, cool cities in the world with so many unique things to do. They need their new safety video whenever the real deal comes out, if you're correct, could just be something as simple as showcasing Dubai and all the sights it has to offer. That would be
Absolutely.
A good, classy, simple video. Put some celebrities in there. Why not? But I think you could be right, actually, about why they went with this in the interim. But then why didn't they just keep the old ones? That's what I can't make sense of. But anyway.
Well, I think that they're going to have to do updates anyway for the likes of the A350, which is joining the fleet this year. So while they could, you know, could have updated the existing one slightly with it, it would have still required a whole kind of re-recording of the safety features of the aircraft. And therefore, maybe they took it as the opportunity to just do this kind of interim video. But it is, as I say, it's funny that they're, instead of just dropping the safety videos, the new Emirates safety video, the video literally begins by them telling to passengers, you're not going to get A-list here. Like, you're not getting a celebrity. Yeah. There is no this and that. And it's like, you guys are talking about yourselves. You realize that, right? Because everybody else has had these boring factory ones for a long time. And most airlines have now moved into the destination-based ones, which I think are the most successful balance. If you can show a variety of destinations or the home country destination, but also balance it with something that is easy to understand, calm, and crucially hits every single safety aspect that a passenger needs to be aware of. Keeping your shoes on takeoff and landing, you know, removing high-heeled shoes, though, if they're high-heeled shoes in the event of an evacuation, not taking anything with you. If you're able to hammer that down and it still look visually, you know, something beautiful, I think that's the decent balance to take.
Yeah, absolutely. So we don't really have much time for Q&A today, guys. We promise we're going to do a lot next week. I just have one thing I want to share here from Andrew, one sort of point of discussion, which I find quite interesting. I want to hear what you would do, Alex. So he says, here's an onboard seating etiquette question. I remember on the podcast a few weeks ago, you and Alex were discussing the whole, should I move for a family to sit together issue? Well, I'm sitting on an EasyJet A320 in seat 3F. A girl is sitting in the middle seat, 3E, obviously her allocated seat, and nobody is in 3D, the aisle. The doors are closed, but we're sitting here with an ATC slot, but she isn't moving to the aisle. Surely the logical thing to do is sit there and give us space between us. And I don't know if I should tell her to move. Oh, the social anxiety, he says. This is an interesting situation, and I have been in this situation before as
is
well.
It? I mean, is it interesting? I don't know. Isn't it completely obvious what to do?
I know, but I have had, so I'm not lying when I tell you, I've had this situation multiple times over the years, and I suggest someone move, and they go, no, I'd rather sit here, next to me in the middle seat. Literally what? On multiple occasions, for some reason, either people are just extreme rule followers, so they want to sit in that number that's on their boarding pass, or I don't know what it could be, but so when I read this, I was like, this sounds like a situation that I've been in, but I have always suggested it. So I think Andrew should have also at least suggested it to her to give her the idea and maybe do a little bit of encouraging as well.
I think I would have just politely said to her, hey, given that boarding is complete, that aisle seat is free. So did you want to go to the aisle seat and then we both kind of get the additional space that British Airways Club Europe passengers pay £1,000 for with the empty middle seat, you know? Or, you know, did you just want to pop to the aisle seat and then we both get to enjoy a bit more space? If that person then said, no, I'm okay, then I'd be like, you're a psychopath.
You would have offloaded yourself.
I would have offloaded myself. Bing. Delayed it's the not whole just the ATC flight. Delay. It's me as well. Because evidently I'm sat next to a complete and utter social psycho. But no. But seriously, come on. Why would you, how could you glue yourself to somebody in that scenario when you've got the empty seat? I would give them the benefit of the doubt that they would maybe not think it was acceptable to move or this, that was the allocated seat. But boarding is complete, my dear. Therefore, you are able to make that move.
Yeah, exactly.
That's interesting. Let's go to a couple of questions, okay? Just quick ones. First one, or a couple of comments as well. First comment, this was in relation to the story that I posted of you with me at the bar. And I said that you are, I said, fancy seeing you here nonstop down in your new life as a onboard bartender. And Andrew says, 1 minute in the podcast, he wants to be the CEO of an airline. The next minute, he's a bartender. Much more fun, I reckon. I believe that's true.
Wait, Andrew, is this the same Andrew that sent me the question?
This is a different Andrew, I believe. Anyway, okay. So Johan got in touch. He says he sent a photo of the Lufthansa Senator Lounge business class. And he said, I'm on my way to enjoy some stale pretzels at the Senator Lounge of our favorite airline.
Johan, prayers.
Bon appetit. Yeah. And just keep chewing because, you know, I imagine that quite hard. Quite hard. We have a message here from Mohammed in Oman. He says, hi, Alex. Thank you and Dan for the awesome podcast. I don't skip any episode. Thank you, Mohammed. He says, question, do you think that the bus gates will be eliminated in Doha when the current work on the extension is complete? Quick answer to that, no. There will be more jet bridge gates. That you can see it if you land at Hamad Airport. You can see the extension on the extension that is being built. But it's not going to end the concept of bus gates because they just have too many flights, too many stands, and they need all the stands that they can get. Yuhei says, hi, Dan and Alex, listener here from the Philippines. I love your podcast and your side stories. Please do make it twice weekly. I think he says twice daily. I don't know how that would work. I have two questions. The first, with Cebu Pacific ordering 102 and 50 purchase rights for the A321neo, what are your thoughts on this? Well, let's quickly go to that. What did you think when you saw this news? So Cebu Pacific taking a big bundle of 321neos. I'll give you my quick thoughts. I'm surprised they didn't wait for Farnborough Air Show in a couple of weeks to announce this. Usually this is a quieter period because Airbus want to save up the orders to announce them at Farnborough, but also I think it gives them the low-cost growth, Cebu Pacific, that they deserve in order to, you know, accelerate what they are doing already, but take it to the next level. What do you think?
Yeah, see, I mean, the Philippines is an incredibly populous country, still population that's growing quite fast. So they need expansion. Philippine Airlines is not doing that well. So something needs to fill the void. Cebu Pacific is here to do it.
That's he goes like on to ad. Ask a, yeah, it does. He goes on to ask a few more questions that we can take next week, but he says, thank you again. And I love the podcast. Thank you for bringing life to the aviation world with this podcast, and all love from the Philippines. We love the Philippines. We send our love back
to
the wonderful heart of the Filipino. And yeah, well, look, it's been a pleasure as always. And I am happy to have shared such a fun half a week with you, Dan, running around Paris and then reminiscing all about it now on the podcast.
Yes, let's do it soon again. So let's do it in Paris. I don't mind. But, you know, LA, Gothenburg, they're all on the list.
Yeah, well, on your list. LA is on mine. That other place you mentioned gets mentioned far too much, so I don't want to give it the airtime. But on that, we'll update you guys next week. We look forward to speaking to you then. And anything that you want us to discuss in depth, just flag it to us, because we're very much across what is happening in the industry. But we know that many of you are listening from different home markets with different stories that matter to you. And we're always willing to do a deeper dive into those stories.
Yes.
Please, we'll see you this time next week.
Yeah, please, if we've missed one of your questions from weeks prior, things have gotten a bit disorganized. So feel free to bump that, resend it, send all your questions for next week. We'll be happy to answer those. And we can't wait to see you all then on air.
And if you're in the UK, you have a duty to vote, okay? So please make sure that in this week's election, regardless to who you are voting for, in the spirit of democracy, our listeners in the UK, please make sure that you get out tomorrow, Thursday, the 4th of July, and vote. It has never mattered so much after 14 years of chaos. Regardless to who you are voting for, just make sure you're exercising your democratic right to vote. We'll see you this time next week, probably with a new UK government. We'll have more on that on air. See you later, guys.
Bye-bye.
Are you struggling with weight loss? Scared of getting the shot? Golo is a better way to lose weight. No prescriptions or insurance required. Just take one Relief supplement with each meal and follow the Golo for Life plan. Golo's Relief contains 7 natural plants and 3 key minerals to target body fat and combat the stress of dieting. Golo is clinically proven to work and safely and effectively controls sugar cravings and hunger while minimizing muscle loss, so you feel good and inspired to reach your goal weight. Stop going with the latest fad starvation diet. Stop depleting yourself and robbing your body of energy. Start living your best life today. Golo is effective and affordable, so before you consider drastic measures like the fad diets and new weight loss injections with potentially dangerous side effects, including significant muscle loss, learn more about Golo at Golo.com. Again, that's Golo.com. Join the 5 million who have already made the switch to Golo today. Visit Golo.com. That's Golo.com.